Deuteronomy 32, I'm to focus on verse 11. As an eagle that stirs up her nest and flutters over her young, he spread abroad his wings and took them. He carried them on his feathers. Well, that is an optical illusion that a flying eagle carries its young on its feathers. Just an example of how the Bible does use phenomenological language, as it were. The Bible does use language that reflects simply how things appear from an earthbound perspective, rather than how things ultimately are. But that's just an observation. Point is, the eagle teaches its young to fly by throwing them out of the nest, and then it flaps its wings, and that creates a current of air that keeps the baby eagle sort of aloft, and the baby eagle then spreads its wings and learns to fly. And in case anything does go wrong, there is a safety net, because the mother eagle is in fact beneath the little eagle. So then, God's saying, that's what I did to you. And you could say that the draft of the air, of the wind, that's made by the mother eagle is maybe like the work of the Holy Spirit. The point is, God wanted his people to fly. That's the idea. And he wants us also to fly independently. Underneath us, as Moses says, are the everlasting arms. There is this safety net with God, but his intention is that we should fly independently. This was his whole idea here, that this is what he had done with Egypt, with Israel coming out of Egypt. He had carried them out of Egypt, he had taken them out of Egypt, just as the eagle throws the baby chick or the baby eagle out of the nest to teach it to fly. So then, this is God's intention, that we should fly ultimately independently. And this fits in with a wonderful theme that there is in the Bible, that it is God's intention to give us freedom in its ultimate sense. Paul talks in Romans 8 about the glorious liberty of God's dear children. This is what is ahead. Now, for the moment, we are either slaves of the flesh, slaves of sin, or we are slaves of God. And just as Israel changed masters when they left Egypt, they were servants to Egypt, but then God says, let my people go, that they may serve me. They changed masters, they became God's servants. So this is what happens at baptism. And Romans 6 is on about that quite a bit. But within that metaphor, there is no ultimate freedom. You are either a servant of sin or a servant of God. And yet, the great paradox is that through that experience of serving God, we come to the ultimate freedom. In a few of his parables, the Lord talks about himself as our master and us as his servants, to whom he has given his wealth. And we are to look after that, we are to trade that, etc., until he comes back. And he passes the comment once, if you don't know how to be faithful in that which is another man's, who will give you that which is your own? And that, I think, is a very, very profound statement, because the point is that all that we have now is not ours. It is God's, and whatever you give of that which God has given you back to him, as it were. And yet we are promised that we shall be given that which is our very own. And I think that that looks forward to some paradigm of ultimate freedom that we're to look forward to in God's kingdom. At the moment, it seems that we are just caught with ultimately only two choices: serve myself, and the flesh, sin, the ego, or serve God. And as soon as we think, I just want to be free, I just want to be free, I just want to do my thing, I just want to have my own self-determination, I want to be free, I want to do my thing, I want to do what I want to do, bang, you know, you are serving ego, you are serving self, you are serving flesh. And yet on the other hand, all you've got, the only other option is to serve God. And so we are caught really in a binary choice. There is no third way. No man can serve two masters. You've got to choose one. And that's how it is. That is really just how life is. And yet, I think that there is this third way that we sort of hanker for. You see people, or hear people singing about it, writing about it. These ideas of ultimate freedom, ultimate self-determination, etc. We sort of are at the very frontier of human understanding here. Because, as I say, ultimately there are only those two ways for us now. But we sense that there is another way. It's not possible now. In this life, it's either serve yourself, serve the flesh, or serve God. That's your choice. There isn't a third way. And yet what is coming is, as Jesus said, you're now being faithful over that which is not yours, and you are simply my servant, and then I will give you that which is your very own. So there will come this ultimate freedom. This is what we're being trained for. We've been, as it were, thrown out of the nest, and beneath us are the everlasting arms and the wings of God, the rush of the wind, of the breath, of the spirit that's made by his wings to teach us to fly independently. And really, if we are God's dear children, this is what happens. When you are a child, you are raised by your parents, but the idea is that they are raising you to fly independently. I don't know if you quite see what I'm saying. It is, of course, hard to express in words. It's hard to articulate it because this is something that is outside our paradigms at the moment. The only paradigms we seem to have are either serve yourself or serve God. Serve the flesh or the spirit. That's a choice. But there is this ultimate freedom when we are no longer servants, when we are no longer simply doing what we are told. And of course, as Jesus says, even now, I've not called you servants, I've called you friends. And yet we also know from the metaphors of the New Testament that we are, in another sense, still his servants. But I'm saying that there is coming ultimately, forever and ever and ever, the ultimate freedom, where we shall be, as it were, flying free, flying independently. That, I think, is God's intention for us. And it's all of grace, isn't it? Because it will have to be given to us. We cannot attain this of ourselves. It will all be of grace. And so what's happening now is that we're being trained for that ultimate independence, for that ultimate freedom, which is going to go on forever and ever and ever. You see these adverts, let's say, of a certain mark of car, a certain brand of car, that you buy this car, and, well, the idea is there's the open road into the sunset, and you've got all the freedom you want with this particular wonderful vehicle. And you know, the idea is very attractive, isn't it? And yet we know that it's all a bit fake, that there are ties that bind, that there are limitations, that it's not quite like that in one way or another. Whereas the ultimate freedom that God has designed for us is just, as Paul says, the glorious liberty, the glorious freedom of God's dear children. It's beyond that. It is the actual eternal reality that we shall be free. And yet that freedom, as I say, will be in one sense to do what you want. And yet in this life we're developing a desire to serve God and to be according to his principles, to extend things, to articulate according to his name, his principles, his characteristics. And you know, I think we all already see that developing. What do I want? In my deepest heart, it is to serve God. It is to do his will. It is to be like him. Sure, the flesh and the world and society in which we live, the ties that bind, frustrate that. But that's what I want of myself. Not because I'm a manipulated slave, but absolutely of myself. That is what I want. And we shall be given then that freedom forever and ever. So I think these things are all somehow foreseen when God uses this metaphor and says, look, I took you out of Egypt like an eagle throws its baby out of the nest and I'm carrying you on eagle's wings. And the draft that's created by my wings is like the spirit, and I'm teaching you to fly. And if something goes wrong, I'm underneath you. Even in all this, I'm your safety net.